Coming up, the TipsNet for October 15th. Kilo Alpha 6 Papa Delta Golf, the other Kevin in Norwich. And I have wanted to invite some conversation about 160 meters tonight. I've been doing a little experimenting.
Here is Whiskey, 1, Foxtrot, Juliet Whiskey, Chuck in Groton, no questions.
Here is Kilo, 0, Juliet Echo, Bravo, Josh in Groton, no questions at this time.
We have Kevin, KC1MVX, the other Kevin, KA6PDG, not Kevin, K1B, Dave, K1DCT, and Chuck, W1FJW, and Josh, K0JEB. Any further check-ins, please come with your call sign now.
Yeah, and you look awfully funny that way, Timmy. You may want to see a doctor. Thanks. I thought I've been experimenting with 160 meters, so a few comments and things I've heard and things I think I've learned and maybe a bit of reminiscing here, but I'll do my part quick. I did learn that my little doublet antenna, in spite of the fact that it's a fairly short doublet and is a very weird shaped doublet, works a little bit on 160 meters. Last week I talked to a group of guys, including stations in two in northwestern Connecticut, one up near Watertown, New York, another one in Scranton, Pennsylvania, another one north of Baltimore, and I think there was one other in New Jersey or New York or something. So apparently, when conditions are right, I'm able to be heard and copied well 300 miles away. So one of the things I hear the guys say, and this is a group that I've been visiting with, I think, on three occasions now, usually after 8 or 9 at night, is they like to talk about on 160 meters, you need lots of wire and you need lots of power. Well, I don't have a lot of power and I don't have a lot of wire. Now, I don't think my signal was as good as most of the guys on the band, but that's one of the things I've heard. Lots of wire and lots of power for 160 meters. I also heard 160. I was told that 160 meters, because I'd never been on it before, is the gentleman's band. And, of course, my response is, gee, I thought they were all gentlemen's bands on ham radio, but so be it. Also, I have been told that 160 meters, and I didn't know this, is best in the darker half of the year, like late fall, winter, early spring. Propagation is better on 160. Let me reset. And the final comment, when it comes to reminiscing, because some of you guys might have used 160 over the years, I thought I had heard somewhere here locally that years before repeaters came into their own, that the hams in southeastern Connecticut would use 160 meters to provide communications for some of the public service community events like road races and triathlons and parades and stuff. I have trouble imagining how that happened, so maybe I misheard that, because it seems like using 160 in a vehicle or in a portable setup station might be a real challenge. So those are some things that I have heard, and I think I've learned about 160, and I've got a lot more to learn, but others might have war stories, Tim, and I thought it might be a potential topic of interest. KA6PDG, back to net.
The 160 helping out with the road races and so forth. I can think of a couple of misquotes that might have led to that, or maybe we're talking about different kinds of road racing, because some are very short, and then again there's some road races that are quite long, especially if you're in vehicles. Anyhow, for instance, road rallies, where you don't go over the speed limit, but you're still timed, and it can sometimes go quite the distance. But let's see what other people think. Let's move on to Kevin, KC1MVX, and see what he thinks, or if there's anything else he has for us. This is KC1TWR in the TipsNet.
KC1MVX, good evening. My only experience with 60 or even 160 or even 80 meters for that matter is during field day when we had the full G5 RV up and we are operating the ICOM 7300, and I was able to make some contacts on it, but it was field day, so a bit different situation, but definitely a lot less people on it compared to 40 and 20, so a lot more easier to get through, but then a lot less contacts to be made. I don't know, I've been doing a lot on 20 and 40 because that's what I have the capabilities for. Despite how short my vertical CP5 antenna from Diamond is, and like how close to the ground it is, I've been getting contacts: Ohio, Colorado, the Carolinas, Florida. Just checked in to the YL network, 40 meter YL network, right before the net. So that's working well for me, but it definitely can't tune on 80 or 160, so I am far away from being able to have that capability or experience outside of field day, throwing a big wire up in a tree. That's all my input is. KC1MVX, back to net control.
Okay, thank you, Kevin. And, I was thinking about the last part of what you were saying, and it dawned on me, I wonder if there's a word for an amateur radio operator who has access to everything. Everything from the 160 all the way up through the gigahertz, DMR, C4FM, E-Star, and CW, and Packet, and FT8, and all of it. There's got to be a word for somebody who has finally reached, like, the end of the internet. There are no more bands to explore or modes of communication. They've reached the end. Personally, I don't think it's possible, but maybe there is. But, it seems like every time you think you've mastered something, you find, somebody else has another band, and it can be quite enticing. Or, yeah. Okay, let's move on to Steve and see what thinks of all this. NK1V, this is KC1TWR and the TipsNet.
NK1V, Steve here. Yeah, that's actually a good topic, 160 always. I would, prior to, I guess it was Isaac, I whatever this tropical storm was in October there, ripped my doublet from the sky. I was able to get 160 fairly well. What I was told to do, and it did work, I took, which took the use of a double knife switch and some fancy switching around, which I had set up to work pretty well. I took my doublet, and what I would do is short both legs of the doublet to the one, the hot or whatever you want to call it, of the signal, and then I would push against the station ground, and plus I added a couple counterpoises just out underneath the deck and around the house a little bit. It actually worked quite well. I did notice 160 I'm not so sure on the gentleman part, I'm not sure on that yet because I didn't spend much time on there. It does seem to work very well later into the night, too. And I was wondering a contest. I did a whole bunch of listening. I did some listening. It seems like the noise is different. It's a different kind of noise that you hear on it, you know, the natural, the atmosphere noises. It's pretty cool. So I also can get it on my NFED. I have 124-foot NFED. Let me reset. The NFED that I'm actually disappointed in its performance. It's probably something I need to tweak a little bit, but it loads on anything, but it doesn't really send the receipt. It actually receives pretty good, but I don't think I'm getting out. But that's neither here nor there. So I am working on getting my doublet back up. I actually did work on the feed line this weekend, and I actually cut my horizontals today, and piece by piece, I'm going to try and get that back up. The performance of that is just incredible, and I'd like to get 160 again. Just if nothing else to say, I can do it. Back to net, NK1B.
Okay, very good, Steve. That was interesting how you modified the doublet in order to work 160. I never would have thought of that solution. And I wish you success in getting the doublet back up there again and making everything work. Okay, let's move on to Dave. And I don't know if he's ever worked 160, but we'll find out. K1DCT, this is KC1TWR on the tip snap.
Oh, good evening to all. This is K1DCT. And why, of course, I've worked 160. That's a, I'm trying to get through as much as I can remember. Let's see, Tim, someone that has done it all and everything else, I would call them independently wealthy and own a lot of land, particularly if you're doing 160. As far as Kevin's questions go, I have always heard of 160 referred to as the gentleman's band. And you're right, they all should be, but sometimes they're not. So I've worked 160 on CW and sideband, and true, it is much better during the cooler, less daylight months. You know, so, you know, December, January, February, it seems it's very quiet. And you get some good propagation if you can stay up long enough, like beyond midnight and so forth. The band will get quite long, as they say. So you can work some good DX on 160, but you gotta be up at the right time of the night or early morning. And I cannot say I have ever done that, but I have worked at about this time of night. There was a group I used to talk to quite often on, we'd use 75, and then when the cooler, darker months came around, we'd go up to 160, and crystal clear. And I was only running 100 watts. They were all pretty local people, you know, Connecticut, maybe into Massachusetts. So, but a lot of wire helps, you know, it's just that much more signal to try and get out there. Of course, most people like myself on 160, you need to use a tuner. So, you know, you get what you get. And what Steve mentioned, I've heard of that done many times. You know, if you have a dipole for 80 or 75 meter phone, to short the two of those together and then feed that directly into your tuner and get some results. It may not be great results, but, you know, as I like to put with a tuner, you find a happy spot. Back to net, K1DCT.
Okay, thank you for the explanation there, Dave. And, yeah, I kind of suspected you'd worked 160 before. And good to know about the timing and the what time of year, what time of day or night is the best time. And sounds like it can be not a magic band like 6 meter, but something that could be kind of chased a little bit. Okay, let's move on to Chuck and see what he's thinking about the whole 160 meter and shorting doublets and so forth. W1FJW, KC1TWR on the tips net.
Well, my first thought on shorting a dipole or a doublet or a G5RV and running it against station ground is it becomes a loaded vertical. What we think of as the antenna really becomes just a capacitance hat to get some current in the vertical part. So you get a vertically polarized signal. And you might want to make sure, just double check, to make sure you do not have a choke ballon or other isolator in the line, such as you might have to prevent RF from coming back down the coax into the shack, because that will tend to look like an open circuit for the common mode current going out to the antenna. Meters is medium frequency, like the broadcast band, and subject to the D-layer absorption during the day. That's why it takes a dark night to for it to go long, and that's about all I know about 160 meters, back to net, W1FJW.
Thank you, Chuck, and especially talking about the D layer and so forth, and the safety factor of what can happen if you don't have the antenna set up correctly and how it can feed back. Let's move on to Josh. I know he's a fellow person who likes to scrap things together out of paper clips and string and bubble gum and all the rest of it, and I'm curious if he's ever actually worked 160 and what he thought of it. K0JEB, KC1TWR, and the tips net.
KC1TWR, K0JB. The comment about what do you call a ham radio operator that's done a little bit of everything, I would call them single. That's just my opinion. But as far as the gentleman's band, I think that's probably a good analogy. I have run into a Yahoo or two on 160, but in general, I think it's because it's called gentleman's band because most of the people that you run into on that band seem to know what they're doing to be able to get on the band, so it's not as susceptible to the QRM that you get on the other bands. I have been on 160 CW and on sideband. My G5RV I can use on 160 if I short out and turn it into a capacitance hat, like Chuck said. But I've got a 43-foot vertical that I'm able to use on 160. Right now I don't have it up, but it's definitely quiet band as far as you know, ground noise for me anyway. And yeah, it's I don't know, it's completely different. No noise, and if there's nobody out there, there's nobody out there. But That's about all I have on this round. It's K0JB back to net.
Okay, thank you, Josh. And, yeah, good experiences, and interesting to know that it's a quiet band as well. This is the Tri-City Amateur Radio Club TipsNet, open to all amateur radio operators. If anybody would like to join us this evening, please come with your call sign phonetically and your name and location. And if you'd like to join, please come now.
I found them very broadening, very very good comments, interesting to sit here and listen, and yeah, I'd heard about 160 going long in the middle of the night. I have yet to experience that, and as far as using a tuner, that is what I'm doing, but the of course, having such a short antenna, it doesn't really, it's not too happy. We'll tune down below 2-to-1. And that's considered to be safe. I'm using the MFJ-993B, which you've heard me brag about, and the ICOM 7200. And the 7200, like I think most radios nowadays, solid-state radios, will fold itself back power-wise if it doesn't like the match. So I'm estimating I'm putting out about 60 or 70 watts. Next time I have a pair of eyes in the shack, I'll test that theory out. But I think it's folding back some. But, yeah, very helpful, very interesting comments, and thank you. As far as the... road races and triathlons and public community events. Maybe that's something I misunderstood. Maybe it was 10 meters or something. I just remember scratching my head and thinking, how'd they do that on 160? Anyway, very helpful, Tim. Thank you, KA6PDG.
I didn't want to say it the first round and influence people, was that maybe somebody said 6 meters for the local events, and then somehow that got into, you know, 160. Maybe they were talking about, you know, 1 6-meter event or one. Anyhow, I'm digressing here. Okay, let's go through a second round and see if people want to continue talking about the 160 and or anything else they'd like to discuss. We'll go next to Kevin, KC1MVX. This is KC1TWR and the TipsNet.
KC1MVX. Yeah, I think I definitely exhausted my knowledge of 160. The only thing I'm really working on now, other than I'm going to try to get my HF antenna higher up in the air. I just kind of, I need to figure out a way to drive a 20-foot pole into the ground. I can do a 10-foot pole because my ladder reaches that high, but to get like a 20-foot pole, I'm going to need, I don't know, a JLG or something. Because I can't really dig up my garden and put cement in there. I'm not allowed to do that. But other than that, I'm just trying to figure out a cooling solution for when I'm out back and I'm running my Kenwood and crossband repeat, even in 5 watts, for the 440 side. I found it getting hot during a net when people are basically constantly talking. So right now I just put it on top of my cabinet because I have a window AC unit right above it that just blows cold air on it, and that works. But I'd like to find a nicer, more elegant solution and just build something basically with cooling fans in it for all the radios, because I like to tinker and build stuff. So I'm just going to do it and see how nice I can make it look. KC1NVX, back to net control.
Okay, maybe people on the on air this evening will have some thoughts about driving a taller pole. And my solution to the heat on the radio is very simple. You just get a large block of ice, set it on the radio, and that'll keep it nice and cool. And but don't sue me when the radio shorts out. Okay, let's move on to Steve, NK1V, and see if he has any thoughts on your two questions there. NK1V, KC1TWR, and the TipsNet.
NK1V, and Kevin, Kevin X, the, I actually was still thinking about Kevin's, the other Kevin's comments, and I didn't completely catch everything you said. I know you were talking about a radio overheating, running hot and stuff. That I know the other night you were working on some crossband stuff that was kind of interesting. I don't know, the solution is something, if it's a newer radio, if it's getting that hot, there's seems to be some issues there. I do run, sometimes with park stuff, I'll run little cooling fans and stuff if I'm really just, you know, in contesting kind of thing, if I'm really pushing some stuff out, but normally I don't. Actually, this radio here of mine gets pretty hot. It has no fan or anything. Tonight, I'm running pretty low power, so not a big deal. So on the 160 meters and the using it for like the public safety things, I just checked to make sure, because isn't broadcast AM radio just a little bit below 160 meters? So it's, to me, it might not actually be all that strange to be able to use that, like with handhelds or something, because, I mean, you, your car radio, older car radios and the little transistor radios, you could pick that up. And just an interesting thing I thought about, that it, I don't know of that happening, any kind of handheld you could do 160 on, but you certainly could listen to it on it. So I'm not really sure. I guess if the propagation was proper for the situation, it would not be that far-fetched. Back to net, NK1B.
Okay, yeah, interesting thought there on the 160 and the AM radio and so forth, Steve. And just to clarify for everybody, what Kevin, KC1NVX, was talking about is radio getting hot, is he has it set up for crossband, so it's on a net like this, it's constantly receiving on the 2 meter as each of us talk, and then it's constantly transmitting on the 440 side to his handheld. So consequently, while you know, his handheld is only transmitting when he talks, like most radios, his mobile rig is constantly transmitting, constantly, as each of us talk. So I think that's why it's getting a bit hot. But as you said, he's also thinking about building some kind of a enclosure or something for the radio so he can put fans in and or something of that nature. I think I've fairly well captured it. And then there's the question about, he has a 10-foot pole driven in the ground, and he's trying to think of ways to drive a 20-foot pole in the ground in order to get his antenna, his HF antenna up higher. Okay, let me reset just a moment. Okay, we'll move on to Dave and see what he thinks about these two issues or anything else that's been talked about. K1DCT, KC1TWR, and the TipsNet.
All right, good evening again. This is K1DCT. Let's see. As far as the 160 for road races and stuff, if that ever happened, that was far before my time. And as Steve said, yes, it's, you know, AM broadcast is just below that. So, you know, you could go back to the, I don't know what it was, 20s or 30s, when police cars only had receivers, you know, and that calling all cars. Yeah, that was a broadcast, but nobody could answer them, so they could alert everyone, but I guess it could be used in that way, in some fashion, but 160 mobile, that'd be pretty tough. I'm sure it's not impossible, but sounds kind of tough. Let's see, Kevin's problem, Kevin X's problem, with his crossband transmitting. I find it hard to believe that, you know, if you set the 440 side out to your handheld, if that's down at 5 watts or whatever the low power setting, it seems odd that it would get that hot. One solution is, I'm sure the radio has a heat sink on the back, is to purchase an additional heat sink and just strap it on there to, you know, with tie wraps or hose clamps or just to dissipate that heat. Of course, cooling fans will certainly help. And, you know, you could go cooling fans with some sort of thermostat on there to control it, so when it got to a certain temperature it would come on, and powered by either 12 volts or 120 volts or something else. So that's about all I got, I think. Back to net, K1DCT.
Okay, good comment about the road race and back in the 20s, 30s, just having the mobile rigs being on the receive side, and good comment about strapping on an additional heatsink. That's not a bad idea. Okay, before we go any further, just going to do another call out, see if anybody else wants to join the TIPSnet this evening. If you would like to join the TIPSnet, please come now with your call sign, name, and location. Okay, next we'll move on to Chuck, W1FJW, and see what he thinks about both the pole and the heat sink and the heat problem, or anything else on the 160, or anything else for that matter. W1FJW, KC1TWR, and the TIPSnet.
Well, getting the 20-foot pole on the ground, this is Connecticut, this is New England. The glaciers were here and brought a ton of rocks, and they've gone back for more rocks. What you need to get a 20-foot pole and round rod in the ground around here is a miracle, or some kind of very heavy equipment, or dynamite. I think an array of shorter rods would probably have to be adequate. And the idea of the fans with a thermostat control is good. The cabinet for our repeater, for the Raceon repeater, has fans that not only have a thermostat, but they sense the push-to-talk line on the repeater, and when the repeater switches on, it turns on the fans, and then when the repeater returns to standby, the fans shut down unless the cabinet's too hot, and then they stay running till the thermostat says it's cool enough for them to quit. Works out pretty good. Back to net, W1FJW.
In regards especially to the like the Raceon repeater is set up where the extra fans kick in when the push to talk comes on. just dawned on me, Kevin, now that I'm thinking more diligently about it, my morning coffee has finally kicked in. Can you drive into the ground a pipe whose inside diameter is just slightly bigger than the outside diameter of the pipe? That would allow you to mount the antenna on the pipe and be able to then raise it up and drop it right into the departure pipe. And then, you, of course, you need another connection up near the top to kind of give it a little bit more stability. But just thinking that might work out for you. But let's see what Josh thinks. Let's go to K0JEB, KC1TWR, and the tips net.
KC1TWR is K0JB, and it's a dangerous thing to ask me for my opinion. let's see, I got a bunch of comments I wanted to give my 2 cents in on. Tim, when you're on Echolink, there might be a setting in your phone where you can turn off the system sound notifications every time you're getting an email notification. We're hearing it over the repeater. As far as the heat on the radio for MVX, it might be a good idea to check the manual. I know ham radio operator and manuals don't always go good together, but in my experience with especially the Chinese brand ham radios, I have seen where in small lettering somewhere they usually refer to the duty cycle that the radio is designed for, and a normal radio that you and I would buy to operate in our house isn't usually designed or set up to run full duty cycle like a repeater is. And I've actually, in one of my radios, in the manual, it says that you can run for 2 minutes on and take 3 minutes off before operating the radio again. So the duty cycle might have something to do with it, and it could be maybe you have a slight impedance mismatch on the antenna you're using, or you're running on high power, and I would suggest turning it down to low power. Let me reset. It's K0JB. As far as the 160 stuff we were talking about, I want to mention for MVX, if you were to get yourself a manual tuner, I'm pretty sure you would be able to get away with using that antenna you have there on 80 meters. A manual tuner has a lot more capacitance and inductance that you can put in line, and it would basically just allow you to load the antenna up a little bit, and it wouldn't be as efficient as an 80 meter measured dipole or anything, but I believe it would get you on the band. As far as the 20-foot pole, going up that high, I would recommend using some tethers. You know, 20 feet's kind of high for a pole, and then putting an antenna on top. And honestly, in my opinion, I don't think it's worth it. Your antenna would even work good if you just ground mounted it without even having it raised up 10 feet. But since you've got it up to where it is and you've made contacts out of Colorado, I'd say you're doing pretty good. And but, you know, everybody always strives for, you know, improvement. So good luck on that. And I think I'm done talking here, so I'll hand it back to Tim. KC1TWR, K0JB.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Josh, for all those comments. And I will find those system sounds. I don't usually have emails and all the alarms going off and all that, but I will find a way to turn those off. Or maybe I'll find a different device, an old cell phone, to load the Echolink on and do it that way. Also, hey, guess what? You timed out the Echolink repeater between what I was saying.
Okay, let's go back to the top of the list. And I know it's quarter of, but I think we have time for another quick round. And, you know, because there's been a lot of good discussion on all of this. And I'm curious to see what Kevin, KC1MDX, is going to think of this. But first, let's hit Kevin with KA6BDG. This is KC1TWR in the tips net.
All right, everybody's gray matter is all stirred up. This is cool. I was just going to say, I sometimes think of the obvious, so make sure that you've checked the Kevin X, checked the SWR on the 440 side. And also, you know, what temperature is that radio getting? I've always been told that if, particularly the solid-state radios, if it's warm, if it's quite warm, that's fine. That's what those heat sinks are there for, to get rid of that heat and stuff. If it's hot to where it's you can't touch it for more than half a second without taking the chance of burning yourself, yeah, then you got a problem. Josh, good comments on the duty cycle. That should be in the paperwork somewhere. And it just real quick made me think, I was thinking of you, Kevin, make sure those of us that use the crossband, and usually we're on our HTs on the 440 side. I'm going to reset. So you're using your HT out in the backyard, and you're on the 440, and the repeater you're talking into is on 2 meters. That's a very typical arrangement. On this repeater, the 706 machine, you can use the PLD code, and that way that'll save a little bit of transmit time, not much, but what it will do is also make it easier for you to get back into the repeater without waiting for the repeater to drop before you can talk to the NAT, for example. But the point I wanted to make is on your 440 side, guys, this is for everybody. Make sure you use PLD code on that crossband radio, like in this case, Kevin and I both use the V71A. On your 440 side, use PLD code, and that will prevent any spurious static or garbage signals of any kind or unwanted signals from keying up your 2 meter side, because you don't want to do that to somebody else's repeater. That wouldn't be nice. So make sure to use the PLD code on the side that you're using for portable. Hopefully that's clear. KA6PDG back to net.
Direction with that design. Some people are
are thinking, because it's only about 10, 15 feet physically away from me here in the garage, plus the 10 foot of the pole, well, really only the 6 foot of the pole, 4 foot of it is in the ground. Some of the people I was talking to on HF said it sounds like I may be getting RF interference, and they were giving me some advice. I sent some pictures out, and they were all pretty much in agreement of, oh yeah, your antenna is way too close for you. It's just directly coming right back into the shack. That's the issue. So I put some ferrite cores around all my, cables going into my radio to clean it up for now, and you've got to figure out either I can move it out further in the yard or higher up, or maybe, I'm not sure, but it sounds like more the issue is that RF's coming from the antenna back into the shack because it's just so physically close to me. I hope that clears everything up, and thank you all for your answers. KC1VX back to net control.
Information from you as well, and the Kenwood V71A is a pretty, it's not cheap chunk, that's for sure. Okay, let's go on to Steve, NK1V, and see if he has any comments for the final part of the first section of the tips net. This is KC1TWR.
NK1V. Yeah, actually, no, I have a little better grasp of what Kevin X is talking about. I might be something to revisit on a future TIPSnet, because I'm wondering why the issues. I've run very low. I'm guessing now that you're running HF and stuff, and some of the parks in the air stuff, I've run very basic setups, and I've literally been. My station's actually been within what I would call the ground field of it on verticals, and I've had very few RF problems running under 100 watts, of course, but no, it's interesting. Also on poles, I do have a pole here right at the shack. It's 1-inch electrical conduit, you know, the heavy wall stuff that's threaded, and of course the 10-foot piece is easy to put up. It's on I actually have a threaded piece on a hinge, and I use a set of pulleys to bring it up and down so I don't kill myself. And 20 feet is the preferred, because when I put the second 10-foot piece, I can put one of those disc cone scanners actually works very well on 2 meters and for my scanner and stuff. That'll go up and down with no issues. When I put the third piece on for 30 feet, it's just a disaster. And I've had it up with like a 2 meter antenna and stuff, but I'm just not comfortable at all with it. It just gets, it amazes me how much, as something goes out, further out, booms out, it becomes, the weight just multiplies, and just gets, once it's up, it's usually pretty good, but getting something like that to stand up, it's a little bit tricky. So, I don't know, that's something we should bring back around, because I run a lot of things basically on the ground and have very good success, and it sounds like you are having some success anyways, and there may be some other issue why we're getting RF back. Back to Matt and K1B.
Okay, thank you, Steve, and we're going to go ahead and move on to Dave, K1DCT. This is KC1TWR and the TIPSnet.
All right, K1DCT, good evening again. I don't think I have a lot to add. The only thing I would ask is if Kevin X put ferrite beads on the coax feeding that antenna, just to reduce anything that, my antennas are, from where I'm sitting, some of them are, they're probably 40 feet away, but I've never had a problem running even 100 watts, so could just be some freaky thing, but hard to say without seeing it in practice and getting a chance to poke at it. So and as a side note, if Kevin Norwich Kevin wants to meet up on 160 to try things out. I'm sitting on 1865, the end of the Civil War. K1DCT.
Okay, very good, Dave. Hopefully Kevin will might meet you there. Okay, let's move on to Chuck, W1FJW. This is KC1TWR and the TipSnap.
The only thought I have was for Kevin X was that 15 feet horizontal distance might be a little close. It might just be direct radiation from the antenna. And that point would be, would need a bit more shielding, would maybe. That's all my thoughts. Back to net, W1FJW.
Josh, K0JEB, KC1TWR, and the
TipSnap. It's K0JEB. That's all I have for tonight. Everybody have a good one. 7-3. It's K0JEB.
Okay, thank you, Josh. And I think we've pretty well finished the first section of the net. Let me do a last call for any additional check-ins or final comments before we go to section two. If you would like to check in or have a final comment, please come now with your call sign. Announcements about upcoming events and items of interest. If so, please call now. Okay, there are two announcements that I'm aware of. One is the Raceon Club will have their monthly meeting tomorrow night on the N1NW Norwich repeater, 146.73, and that will start at 7:30 p.m. tomorrow evening. The other announcement is that the Tri-City Amateur Radio Club will hold another test session for those wishing to either get their technician's license or upgrade on Saturday, December 12th at the East Great Plain Firehouse, and that will start at 9 o'clock in the morning. The session will be from 9 o'clock until 10:30. So that is Saturday, December 12th at the East Great Plain Firehouse. And please send an email to tricityarc@gmail.com for further details. And or if you would like to register to take an exam. Any questions about these announcements, please call now. Okay, we'll move on to the third section. Is there anyone who wishes to swap, sell, or looking for any amateur radio-related items? If so, please call now.
This is Kilo 1 Delta Charlie Tango.
And KA6PDG had a question, but I didn't hit the right button.
I'm going to go ahead and take Kevin first because this is really
for the VE test session on the 12th of December, is pre-registration required or just suggested? That's all I got. KA6PDG.
Looking for a USB cable that fits a Garmin Nuvi, that's a November uniform, Victor India. Try and update it. Kind of ancient technology, but it still works and just very outdated. So, and could be hooked up to something else at a later date. That's what I'm looking for. K1DCT, back to net.
Quick question, Dave. On the Nuvi, on the USB to Nuvi cable, I presume it's the Nuvi end of it that's not USB, or it's not what we think of as a standard USB. Do you have any kind of idea on what kind of a connection it is, or do you think it's proprietary?
I am not entirely sure. It appears like a USB connector, but it's nothing like one that I have seen before. It's much wider. So it's kind of like the old camera connectors. You know, it's about that height, but it's much wider. So it could be a proprietary cable. I really haven't done a lot of research to find it. I was just hoping someone would have one kicking around. Back to that, K1DCT.
Thank you, Dave. We'll leave the floor open for a moment. Anybody else have any questions or would like to chat with Dave about this, please call now.
W1FJW.
Please go ahead and call your station.
K1DCT, this is W1FJW. Dave, now, there's two versions of the USB cable. I have a Nuvi here, a generic USB cable with the right size, you know, a USB-A connector on one end and a miniature on the other. I forget the letter. Will work to tie it to a computer. The only time you need the proprietary cable is when you're hooking the Nuvi to a power supply, a power source, like a cigarette lighter adapter or a house 5-volt supply. One of the pins has a resistor, I think it's around 20 kilo-ohms. Don't quote me on that, tied to ground so that the Nuvi knows it's tied to a power supply and not a computer. Do you know which one you need?
All right, well, I was not not knowledgeable that it goes into the power cable, because I have the power cable, and I have a connector that fits that, so maybe I have what I need. So I'll give that a try. Thank you. K1DCT.
Back to net W1FJW.
Okay, thank you, Chuck and Dave. I hope that does work out for you. Any other traffic for the third section of the tips net, the cell swap, or looking for amateur radio items, please call now. Okay, then. I think that'll be the last call for the net. I do want to open up one last time for anybody else that would like to check in or anybody else that has any further comments or crosstalk. Please come with your call sign now. We'll go ahead and close the net at this time. I'd like to thank everyone that participated in the Tri-City Amateur Radio Club Tips Net this evening, and thanks to all who stood by as we conducted the net. I'd also like to thank John, W1AN, for allowing us the use of the W1DX repeater, and Joe, K1IKE, for the Echolink connection, which if you're using, if you would like to use Echolink, is Whiskey 1 Delta X-Ray Dash Romeo. And Chuck, correction, wait, and Kevin, rather, KA6PDG, for recording these tips nets, which are available at, on the, if you go on the web browser, to AM, that's Alpha Michael, 1700.org/tipsnet. And there you'll find recordings going back a couple of years now. Each recording file has a couple of words in the file name to give you an idea on what the main subject matter was for each session. The Tri-City Amateur Radio Club sponsors this net and has their meeting on the second Tuesday of the month, which was yesterday, normally at the American Red Cross office, but currently they're holding Zoom meetings. Well, it's open to all interested persons, and the Zoom link is usually posted a few days in advance on the TriCityARC.net website. This net will meet again next Wednesday at 7 p.m. on this frequency. I now return the repeater to regular amateur use. This is Kilo Charlie 1 Tango Whiskey Romeo, wishing everyone good evening and 73.